empty. Everybody else would surely know who's watching my goal.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
With my guest, Kevin, the reformed, in fact, as you listen to him, almost angelic-sounding Mitnick. He was a big-time hacker till the FBI took the wind out of his sails, and now... And now he works for the side of light and goodness, and he'll be right back. Kevin, let's try you out on one more little scenario here.
Okay.
Suppose you were to hook up with somebody who said that they already had access to a computer up at the infamous Area 51, and they had information about what our government knows about alien presence.
In other words, would my need to know interfere with my ability to think rationally?
would your lust to know overtake your fear of a repeated visit to a facility that you know all too well?
No, I don't. I know for a fact I definitely would be interested in the answer, but not to the point of violating the law to find out. I would just figure somebody else would do it, and then they would release the information anyway.
I see.
I wouldn't even have to do it. But I went anyway if I was the only one in the world that...
You wouldn't lust to be the first or the person known for...
I would absolutely be curious about Area 51 and be interested, but not to the point where I would break the law to find out. But many years ago, that was different. That was a different Kevin. I certainly would have, just because I'd be so curious, and it would outweigh the fear.
How old are you now?
41.
41. So you're becoming progressively conservative.
Yeah, I mean, when you get old, you know, I grew out of it. You know, when you get older, you have
other
higher priorities
in
life, and playing games is not one of them these days.
All righty then. Here comes the general public. First time caller line. You're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Good morning.
All right, Mr. Mitnick. It's an honor to speak with both of you. This is TJ in Kansas City.
Hey.
Hi, TJ.
I had a question about Internet Explorer. I've been using. I've been using Firefox for about 6 months now, and it's such a great browser. It just blows Explorer out of the water. I have a two-part question. My first part was, is it possible that Microsoft might have made Explorer vulnerable deliberately? And secondly...
Well, no, one at a time. Answer.
Okay, I don't think so. I don't think they would have deliberately made Explorer riddled with vulnerability.
Plus, exploder is a very derogatory term, sir. Your second question?
And my second question was, I use System Suite 5.0, and they have a pretty good firewall. Do you know anything about that?
You're talking about Norton?
No, it's called System Suite.
System Suite, okay. Because I know Norton has something that, like Norton Security Suite, so I'm not familiar with that. But no, I'm not. I'm only familiar with maybe five or six personal firewalls. That's not one of them.
All right, thanks, gentlemen.
You're very welcome. Have a good morning. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. Just spiffy.
All right. I got two questions, one for Mr. Mitnick and one for you.
Okay.
Mr. like I was saying, my wife and I drive trucks, and obviously, you know, we use a computer for balancing checkbooks and whatever. And so we're running the broadband card, wireless card.
Mm.
How vulnerable is that, like when we're out in the middle of nowhere checking our bank account?
I'll tell you a quick little story. I was at a Starbucks in Los Angeles about 2 months ago, and I ran in there just to grab my email really quick. I mean, I must have been in there 5 minutes, and I grabbed a latte because I was on the road. And then a month later, I get this call from this guy going, are you the famous Kevin Mitnick? I go, you mean the guy that used to be a hacker? He goes, yeah. And I go, yeah, that's me. He goes, were you in a Starbucks in Los Angeles about a month and a half ago? And I go, I don't know. Why? He goes, because I was in a Starbucks, and I was capturing everybody's emails, you know, that were going over the wireless network, and I think I got your email password.
Oh, man.
And fortunately, I don't check any sensitive or business accounts, you know, over any wireless network. This is
Yeah, I guess like we ought to tell the public, Kevin, Starbucks provides something like a T1.
Yeah, they provide T-Mobile, which is, you know, wireless internet for a fee. You could pay a daily fee or a monthly fee.
Right.
So I use that to check an email account that I use, you know, just for personal, not business. And
he got your password.
Well, he got my email, and presumably I know he could have got the password, because when you use a wireless network in the clear, where you pay for it, meaning there's no encryption key, anybody could monitor any of the traffic and get your passwords or any of your communications, unless you're using something like SSL, which is called Secure Sockets Layer. It's like when you see the little padlock on like Internet Explorer,
right,
and you're signing
right.
on to your bank.
Right.
That information cannot be captured that easily. There's another attack called the man-in-the-middle attack, but I'm not going to go into that now unless you're interested, but that might take a little while of explaining.
Okay. Caller?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't understand it anyway.
So if you're doing anything sensitive over right. wireless, I'd make sure that you're using something like SSL, or if you're using, okay. like, if you're to do anything, like a lot of those Yahoo and Hotmail accounts, I think they use SSL to log in, but once you're logged in, all your email is sent over the wireless network in the clear.
All right. And then a second question was for you, Art, and
yes.
about the weather, because I live on the other side of the pass from you, and I remember, I think it was last summer, the lake was down like 75 feet or something.
Yes.
And I was wondering if all this rain has helped that out at all.
You know, we're all wondering that, sir. I appreciate the call. And the answer to that is I wonder, too. I saw a website recently that showed the reservoirs in Arizona a couple of years ago versus right now. And they're in the high 90s. So I think all the water that we've received has, I guess, done good. And that was his question. That's as much as I know. So the Southwest has had amazing rain this year. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Hi. Hello.
Okay, hello.
Yes.
First off, I wanted to say hi to you, Art, and shout out to the Fantastic Forum.
Hey,
and I'm listening on StreamLink on my computer. I'm not listening on the radio.
Got it.
And I got it muted.
All right.
And I am paying for it.
Okay.
And, Kevin, I'd like for you to explain the difference between white hat hackers and black hat hackers, and I'll wait off the air.
All right.
But, Art, check out thebroken.org. That'll explain a lot of what Kevin was talking about tonight.
All right. White and black hat.
Well, the definitions mean different things to different people. There's no clear definition, but a white hat hacker is an ethical hacker that hasn't done anything illegal in the past, but has pretty much through self-study and maybe through some university courses, now does vulnerability assessments or pen testing. Pen testing is simply trying to penetrate into a client's network and find their vulnerability so you could submit a report. A black hat hacker, on the other hand, is somebody who is currently illegally accessing systems or is malicious. So
that's it is, though, a pretty thin line, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, most of the white hat hackers, I mean, even they have this like certification called the CISSP, and one of their code of ethics is you can't even associate with hackers. But I know several people that have this certification, which isn't really that tough to get. It really is a test where it tests your definitions of stuff. It's pretty simple. And a good percentage of those people have illegally accessed systems in the past, at least the people that I've talked to. Now, I haven't spoken to each and every one of them.
You mean they have not upheld their promise?
Well, I even know about five or six of them that have convicted they were convicted of computer-related crimes, but they simply do not disclose that to get the certification. But the truth of the matter is a lot of people that are from the old school, and I don't mean hackers in the sense of writing worms and viruses and stealing credit card numbers and doing really malicious stuff, but I'm purely talking in the sense of unauthorized access.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even at the university level. I mean, if you're in college and you're breaking into your teacher's account, you know, it's still hacking.
That's right. It's a mighty thin line, and on the part of somebody who might be monitoring such actions, I don't know that they'd see a difference at all.
No, they don't. The federal government doesn't distinguish. They just look at it. Did you have authorization? If you didn't, it's. They don't call it hacking. They call it fraud. So if you access a system, what they call a federal interest computer, which usually has some sort of interstate nexus,
that is in itself the violation.
They're exactly. Just like if you make an interstate phone call in the furtherance of a fraudulent scheme, it's the phone call. You're placing the phone call is the actual element that makes the offense.
Yes, got it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning, Art Bell. How you doing?
All right, sir.
That's good. I'm calling from KGO, 600.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, good afternoon, or good evening, I guess.
Okay.
Or morning, yeah, that's right. It's 1:20.
Yeah, it's morning time. My question to you is, I have hobbies, and one of my hobbies when I was a kid about your age was listening to, like, scanners and learning about different frequencies on the scanners and stuff like that.
Yeah, I used to do the same thing.
Okay. So my question to you is, what kind of got you curious into the hacking? What inspired you? What gave you the motivation?
The same thing that had you listening to a scanner, brother, and you know it.
It was my interest in technology, especially with telephones, especially with what they called phone phreaking and manipulating telephone systems.
Okay.
And then from there, that's where I got involved in hacking.
Right. So I don't know if you're allowed to do this over the airwaves or not, but how do you hack?
That'd be a longer conversation.
Okay. Is this not something where you go
No. It's basically analyzing the target system, analyzing the company, analyzing the people, analyzing the technology they use.
Okay.
Well, that's why they call it fraud, because it's grifting, it's fraud. I mean, speaking plain, that's what it is.
Okay. And I don't know how long, but... So for me, because I have I've got a credit card out there, so would I be vulnerable for this?
If you use your credit card, like, over the internet?
No. I have an account with a credit card company.
Right.
And people are always scaring me, don't get a credit card because then you're vulnerable to somebody's system. It's called a paper trail.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, every time you use your credit card, there's an audit trail created, of course. But, I mean, unless you have something to be concerned about creating an audit trail, you know, using a credit card is pretty safe because... if somebody obtains the number and defrauds you, actually the bank takes the loss, and it takes some time. Just you probably fill out a form, an affidavit claiming that you didn't make the transaction.
All right, look, that gets me down to, I live out here in the country. I said it earlier, I don't think I could reasonably live without the internet. I do all my searches, find my products, do my purchases on the internet, and frankly, we're getting very close now to considering internet banking. It seems reasonable on the one hand. I mean, sure, somebody could steal your credit card or something, but, you know, they can do that anyway. I mean, it's going through all kinds of databases. If you walk into a store and the guy swipes your credit card, then I suppose something dials something and that information is transferred. So why not do it over your own computer in the right conditions? I don't think the risk is any greater than if you go into a store and let the guy swipe it. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely correct. You could have someone that skims it at a restaurant. And
exactly.
Now, of course, the vulnerability is that a lot of these e-commerce sites store, especially if they're doing any type of reoccurring billing, they'll store your credit card in their database, and if their system is compromised by a group of Russian hackers and they steal the database, they have your number.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to point out is that would happen anyway.
Walk into the Gap and you buy some jeans.
Yeah.
You're going into a database. When they swipe your card, it goes into their corporate database, and that might be accessible via the internet too. So,
all right. So to be honest with you, my wife and I are thinking about internet banking. You know, that's the big.
I do
scare.
Internet banking.
Do you?
Yeah.
So is it as safe as going to a teller?
Well, there's always the chance that, well, if you're using internet banking, you're using static passwords, and it's possible for an attacker to get your static passwords. They can cause you some difficulties, but I'd have to be, you know, I'm curious about the legalities involved. If someone were to obtain your password and commit fraud,
yes,
who takes the risk? You or the bank? If it was me, the consumer, I'd rather go to a teller. If it's the bank, all they have to do is fill out an affidavit and they credit my account back the money that was illegally transferred or used, then I would say using the internet, because there's no risk to you as the consumer.
Okay, let me ask this. When you sign up for internet banking, Kevin, are you afforded the same level of protection in case of fraud as you would be if you use a teller? Or do you sign releases?
That's what I don't, you know, actually, I did sign up for internet banking, and they give you like this, it looks like an EULA, you know, end user licensing agreement with all this legal stuff, and I just clicked on I agree.
you did, huh?
Yeah, I did. I did read the whole thing, you know. So that's one thing I have to go back and do when I have time. But yeah,
would really like to know.
I get my lawyer to do it instead, because it's just like pages and pages full of legal jargon that I really didn't want to read.
I hear you. All right, International Line. You're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Hi.
Hi there, gentlemen. Happy Easter to you both.
Thank you.
I have a couple of computer questions, but I just wanted to tell you, first of all, that I'm possessed by demons, and if they start talking, I'm sorry.
All right, now, we can't hang on for demons, dear. Sorry, that's a different show, different time. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, sir. I'm calling from Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes.
My first time.
Yes.
I work for a sheriff's office, and sometimes I take my work home and work on it on my laptop. And I have a wireless network, and I was listening to you earlier saying that at the minimum have a WEP system set up.
That's what he said. Yes.
You enable WEP. It's on 802.11 wireless access points.
Yes.
You can enable WEP. It uses a security key, and then you basically on your laptop if you're using Windows, for example, and you connect. You basically type in the same security key you set on the access point, and that's how you set it up.
Okay, is there anything more secure than WEP that I could do?
Well, that's what if you're accessing like sheriff information, I'd be using something like a VPN, which is called a virtual private network over the wireless network.
Okay.
So that way, the only threat is for denial of service attacks, and that's where somebody. Takes a stronger transmitter and tries jamming the radio signal, which you really have no defense for. But at least the information that's being transmitted is fully encrypted using a stronger protocol than the wired equivalency privacy.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
All right. Take care. I use a virtual private network myself for certain things, Kevin. So it's fairly secure.
Yeah. I think it would do the job. There have been vulnerabilities identified with different types of implementations. I don't know what yours is, but it certainly raises the bar.
On top of that, of course, it's virtually always connected.
Right now, let's imagine, Art, that you're running an 802.11 network at home. You mentioned that earlier in the show.
I did, yes.
Let's say you're VPN'd into Premier.
What I actually said was I was using a different protocol than B, not B.
Right, but I mean, okay. We could guess with the other. It's the same, probably. So anyway, not the same as B, but the same idea.
Mm.
I don't think it's Bluetooth. Right. So
I'm not saying
You know what? It's quite funny. I was also in a conference in New York a couple days ago, and I turned on my Nokia, and I just scanned to see who had Bluetooth enabled in the room. There were like three or four people, and you completely, when people don't realize the vulnerability of having Bluetooth on, because you could basically snag somebody's address book, through Bluetooth. So, but with the what was your question on the wireless network again?
I don't even want to re-ask it, because we're rolling in music here to the bottom of the hour. So hold tight. We'll be right back with Kevin Mitnick. This guy who worries me. The whole thing worries me. How much reality can the American people take? We're finding out tonight, and believe me, we'll find out tomorrow night.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Worldwide on the Internet, indeed. The Internet. A subject all by itself, really, in a lot of ways. Kevin Mitnick is my guest. Kevin is a reformed, as I mentioned earlier, very nearly angelic figure who now helps out corporations and poor people protect themselves against the evil black-hatted doers of wrong. We'll be right back. We will be back to Kevin Mitnick in just one moment. Tomorrow night, I'm going to do something a little bit different, even though it's going to be an open line session, which means you can really talk about anything you want to. I am going to begin the show by sort of laying out the situation with regard to energy, America and energy, and the world and energy, and where we are right now and what I think is about to happen. And so give it a little bit of thought yourself tonight. In fact, if you have anything specific to offer in this area, I'm available by email. Two email addresses to get to me, artbell@aol.com or artbell@mindspring.com. Either one of those two will reach me. So if you have something specific with regard to this energy emergency time that I think we're about to enter, you're welcome to email me twix now and then. And if you want to include a phone number, perhaps I'll get you on the air. It will be an open line night, but believe me, that's going to be one subject I'm going to open up right at the beginning. Kevin, you're back on the air again with our first-time caller line. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I was calling actually about a topic that is sort of unique to the Internet called massive multiplayer games. I don't know if he's heard of this or not, but What they are is there's multiple millions of people that actually play these games all around the world. They actually subscribe to them. It's almost like a virtual reality type of thing where people actually become addicted. And matter of fact, I got a friend that's been playing for 6 years, and he's lost his job over the over the game.
Wow.
Yeah, I know a guy whose brother in Amsterdam was addicted to the online Sims game and actually went bankrupt because mm-hmm. he couldn't stop playing the game. Yeah.
What's fascinating is there are people that actually pay their real money online to buy in-game virtual reality items that are rare in the game.
Wow.
Yep. So I don't know if you'd ever heard of the topic yourself, Art, but
that's
kind of like an
addiction to the internet, right? Or some part of the internet, the games.
It's worse because, I mean, I've played myself various different games online for years. Right now I'm playing one called World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to look it up sometime, and you'd be surprised that almost, you know, you actually pay $15 a month to play the thing, but they update and add items and content daily. So
no, I would not be surprised. Believe me, my wife is addicted to certain games as well. And even I have become, I'm not too much of a game person, but I can see how it easily happens, Kevin. A lot of people do get addicted to these online games, right?
Oh, absolutely. And even games that you can play on the Xbox or Sony PlayStation, like the Grand Theft Auto, Vice City, San Andreas, those are three games that are made by Rockstar. I've talked to people that just can't stop playing. I mean, literally, they'll be late to work because they're playing these games. It's very addictive.
Well, the new world, huh? Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Good morning.
Hi, morning.
Good morning, sir. Where are you?
I'm in southwest of New Mexico area, and just to echo the sentiments of the first caller, I know that a lot of those games, it's amazing how people will play that. I actually had played one of the games like that, kind of a fantasy game, and was able to sell something that I had gotten on eBay for $500. It was no postage, just a download. It was crazy. But my question was, living in the Southwest, specifically the New Mexico area, there's just an enormous amount of DOD and DOE stuff.
Los Alamos.
Yeah, and Sandia and White Sands. And I have had friends that are in the computer industry. I am too, but that's I'm not working there now. That I've been sort of shocked that, you know, the earliest level of clearance is just credit check. And a lot of those guys get in there, and I'm surprised of what's going on with some of the servers. I was curious if you had followed that whole scandal that had happened, I guess, at one point with scientists walking out with a hard drive and from the hacker.
Yeah, there was a lot of news about that, Kevin, and, you know, a lot of stories about leaks and that sort of thing down in that part of the country.
Yeah, the Lin Ho Wee case. I remember
mm-hmm.
all that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's I remember a couple news stories where they actually lost the drives and the FBI was searching for them. It was. I don't know whatever happened in those cases, but it was quite interesting.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have a question?
Yeah, how you doing, Art?
I'm fine.
And hello, Kevin.
Hey, good morning.
I recently had a problem with my computer because the AOL security firewall disabled my Windows firewall. And when I tried to install Security Pack 2, it crashed my operating system. Now I got to do a remote clean install.
All right. That in itself, sir, is a wonderful question. Service Pack 2, there are rumors out there, Kevin, that Service Pack 2 caused problems for people. But then most of the people I talked to didn't have a problem at all. It went in just fine.
The issues were compatibility issues with other software that the consumer used, and the compatibility issues, but a lot of those issues have been largely worked out.
Ah. So was it wise to wait a while before putting in Service Pack 2?
I did. I actually personally waited on one of my Windows machines to wait till the bugs got worked out, and I was sufficiently protected through other means, running a firewall and stuff like that. And I didn't have any issues, but I don't know the issue in this gentleman's case. That it sounds like a compatibility issue.
You know, for all the nasty stuff said about Microsoft and Windows and all the rest of it, I love Windows, and I use Windows, and I use Microsoft product, and it's really good stuff. Only, I know from a hacker's point of view, many things are said. I mean, it's sort of looked down on as a...
Well, it's not really a machine. Windows, the OS, is not really for the technically astute security person. And, you know, and Windows is kind of, you know, runs sluggish a lot, and there's takes forever to reboot in some cases. So people prefer, like, Mac OS. But, you know, it really depends what you're using the computer for. And I'm not bashing Microsoft either. A lot of the reason that there's so many security vulnerabilities found in their product is because everybody's looking to find vulnerabilities with Microsoft products because they have the largest market share. So imagine you get the one vulnerability, then you could attack a lot of people.
Because it is so successful. Anything that would attain that level of success is going to be attacked fiendishly, isn't it?
Yeah, but for the reason is, imagine you find a vulnerability in Windows, then imagine that you have a bigger, you know, a large surface of businesses and consumers that you could attack. You find a vulnerability in Mac OS, it's going to be much smaller.
Exactly. All right. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Good morning.
Morning, Art. This is Tim from L.A.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Thank you. I got a question. I'm a Mac user, and my question is, you know, I have my security updated. I have 10.38 and everything.
I can't hear you too well.
Yeah, I can't hear you too well either. You're a Mac user, and you've got your security updated.
Yep. And my operating system's updated and everything. And everything coming in is fine, but if when I use my credit card, is it secure, or is there a way that I could make sure that, you know, when I hit the return key, that my information is still secure from my
computer? I mean, are you talking about using your credit card over
yeah,
the browser?
That's right. Yes.
Well, as long as you're using a site that's using SSL, I mean, it raises the security somewhat. I mean, there are attacks, like what I mentioned earlier in the show, called man in the middle attacks. And then there's the issue of imagine the company that you're conducting the transaction. Is it a reputable company, or is this a fly-by-night company of a hacker that simply set up a website that purports to sell products and services, and you for a discounted price, and you conduct a transaction with it, and yet they get your credit card information, and it's an illegitimate site? So
you never explain man in the middle, really.
Man in the middle of attack is where it's a type of attack of where the consumer is communicating through the hacker's computer to the legitimate site. So imagine that you are connecting to, you know, say you're with Washington Mutual and you're online banking, but unbeknownst to you, when you're connecting to your bank, you're really going through my computer, and I'm acting as the man in the middle, taking your information and relaying it to the bank, and the bank is sending me the information. I'm relaying it to you.
Got it.
And that's a way to do. There's some more detail to this, but that's a way to intercept information that is occurring over a supposedly encrypted channel.
Okay. Again, so that people aren't unnecessarily frightened, is it generally true that if you take precautions, just general precautions, make sure you're on a secured server when you're ordering something, as long as you go that far, you're basically as safe doing this on your home computer as you are taking a card to a store somewhere and having them swipe it to buy something?
I think it's the same. You know, it's just, there's different risks for those transactions, but I think about it equals out. I mean, I look at it, I always look at the end of the day, am I going to have to pay money in either transaction? And at the end of the day, the answer is no, because the bank takes the risk of any type of fraud, not you.
How do you see the future of the internet, period, Kevin?
Well, with respect to security, I think it's right.
No, a broader question.
Oh, broader question.
Yeah. How do you see the internet developing from here? Already, it's amazing.
I believe it's going to continue to grow. I believe that we're going to see our wireless, you know, our mobility, wireless mobility devices is going, you know, because right now we're converging telephony and internet. So we're talking, you know, we have like voice over IP, and I think we're going to even have more integration with our wireless devices, our PDAs, and our cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think we're going to see in the future is a lot more wireless connectivity.
What will voice over internet do to the phone companies?
Well, I don't know. I haven't looked at their balance sheet lately, but like, for example, I have a Vonage account that I use, and I was in Europe about 2 months ago, and I ended up running up a $6,000 cell phone bill, and then when I got back home and, you know, was sick to my stomach over that, I go, I got to think of a solution. So then I realized that I could use Vonage soft phone. So whenever I go to a hotel with broadband,
right,
I essentially bring my number with me no matter where I am in the world, and could actually make calls to and from the United States, and it doesn't cost anything over the internet. And the quality was really good. So
I know. I see these ads on TV, I think we all have lately, for Yak VoIP or whatever it is, where you can sit and yak with your sister-in-law in Seoul, Korea or something, you know, all day long without additional charge. I mean, eventually, from layman's point of view, from my point of view, that's going to affect the phone company.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if you can do cell phone calls using VoIP. It connects to a local switch and it VoIPs it over the internet and,
right,
you know, reducing the charges substantially so they could pass on the savings to the consumer. But there's a downside to, you know, products like Vonage. For example, I believe this one family had only Vonage in the house, and then one person had to make a 911 call, and then Vonage didn't have, there was no 911 implementation. They hadn't set it up yet.
Oh, I've got it, right.
So they couldn't make an emergency call, and it caused a big issue. So now I think they offer where on Vonage you could actually sign up and you put in the address that you're at for your 911 call.
Still, the bigger picture, how isn't the internet going to crush the phone company eventually if this keeps up? Or
the phone companies might get in on the action. And you know, I think, you know, don't forget, a lot of the networks, you know, T1s and a lot of the network connectivity is still going through the Bell system, right?
Hmm. Broadband is this is going to get more expensive? In other words,
I think we're going to get more bandwidth for less money.
You really think so? Isn't bandwidth going to become more and more valuable?
Yeah, it is valuable, but I'm comparing, and why I'm doing this, I'm comparing the prices between Europe and the U.S. In Europe, it's much more expensive.
Right.
And in the U.S., it's, you know, I mean, substantially, like, you're going to pay 20% of the price here in America. So I'm looking at this trend in America of how the prices are dropping substantially, and, you know, and these companies, because of their, you know, they're, you know, being competitive, are offering, you know, better packages for less money.
But as we finally get, I don't know, fiber into every home or into a lot of homes, eventually movies, television, telephone calls, all these things can come over
right over fiber.
And so all of these broadcast networks, all of these telephone companies, all of these cable companies, television stations, they're all threatened, aren't they, ultimately, by the net?
I think so. Unless they can jump on the bandwagon. God, it's 2 in the morning.
It's late.
You understand. But anyway, they jump on the bandwagon and maybe change their business model, and maybe they could exploit the situation and create a service that works in conjunction with the internet.
Maybe. First time caller line, you're on the air with Kevin Mitnick. Hi.
Hi, Kevin. This is USO in San Diego.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. Hey, Kevin, I work in computers. I go to people's homes, and the biggest problem I find is that people have Morpheus and Kazaa and LimeWire.
Oh, yes, the peer-to-peer networks.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's awful. They just get infected incredibly. I cleaned 212 Trojans off a computer the other day with AVG. A few months ago, actually, Adelphia Cable shut down a guy's computer because he had a spam bot on there.
Yeah.
So just wanted your comment on that. I just wanted to implore people that I know the lure of free music is wonderful, but you know, when you pay me $100, $150 to come clean it up, It just doesn't pencil. And a lot of times, I can't even salvage them. There's times I just format the thing because it's that far gone.
What happens. I know exactly what you're talking about, and you're absolutely right. I have a colleague. I had an office here in Los Angeles, and it's an office space, you know, for tech companies, and they share the same network. And when one of those companies gets hit, it drags down the network for everyone. And usually, it's because of the same thing, you know, of the peer-to-peer networks. Mm. In businesses, you basically just restrict it by blocking out the firewall. But at the consumer level, like, you know, it's running products, I guess, like Pest Patrol, hopefully, and, you know, and running AV software. But the problem is if a user of a peer-to-peer network, runs executable code, you know, a lot of these peer-to-peer networks are not only sharing movies and music, but they're sharing software.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once you download software, it could have malicious code embedded, what we call a Trojan. And unless that Trojan has been identified and the consumer is using a tool to detect it and eradicate it, they might not know it exists and it sits on their machine.
Well, if you go playing with the bad guys, then you're...
These peer-to-peer networks are not bad guys.
Well...
I mean, you're in a community, and you could have good guys and bad guys and in between.
I know, but when you're sharing product that is supposed to be copyrighted and mean something to somebody, you're taking money out of somebody's pocket, a performer or somebody, right?
Exactly.
So, I don't know.
Well, they also share music that has been that is allowed to be distributed. They share freeware. You know, it's not just illegal stuff.
And it's just not music either. It's now I know and you know, there are sites where you can go and get motion pictures that hell haven't even been released yet.
This oh, absolutely!
Is such an incredible danger to the motion picture industry.
Oh, absolutely! I mean, it's a huge problem, and of course they're. That's why they've been successful at passing laws like the DMCA.
It's so huge that it would take another whole show to do it, and we will do that, Kevin. We're out of time, man. Show's over.
Wow, it's so quick. Hey, Art, it's been wonderful being on your show again. I always love being on your program.
Take care. Talk to you next time, and there will be a next time. Good night,
and
Kevin.
Stay safe on your computer.
You too, my friend. From the high deserts, I'm Art Bell. See you tomorrow night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride. Filled with the longing, searching for the truth.